Hi, Bobby Halton here for our sponsor, Unimac. Hey, Unimac wants to remind you to take care of your crew with the most complete PPE cleaning solution in the industry. With washer extractors built for maximum performance tailored to NFPA 1851 standards, simple record-keeping capabilities, and free training for your entire firehouse, it's no wonder that Unimac is called on by fire crews across the nation.
Learn more at unimac.com/safe solution.
Okay, welcome to Blog Talk Radio. And tonight with me, I have Chris Naum from Syracuse. Chris and I have worked together a few times on these shows, and I've been on his and he's been on mine, and et cetera, et cetera. So Chris, welcome. You want to just say hello and introduce yourself for those who don't know you?
Sure. Hey, Danny, nice to be on the show here. And thanks for all our good friends at Fire Engineering Magazine and obviously the Blog Talk Radio for this opportunity. For those of you that don't know me and may be living under some rocks out there, been involved in the job for 40 plus years on a variety of different areas and backgrounds and so forth. And the last number of years have really been focusing in on the issues affecting the job and operations from a building construction standpoint. And we've had a good opportunity working with you, Danny, over the last couple of years on some projects, which we're going to talk about. So thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Chris. So, yeah, so before we get into what we're doing in December, what we're planning on doing, I don't know whether it's going to happen or not. Well, hopefully it will happen. But interestingly enough, I know one of the probies in probie school, and the probie had asked me, you know, they're very concerned about building construction. And I have to be honest with you, I'm trying to think back when I was in probie school, and I don't think I knew anything. Which end of the side was up or whatever. I didn't know a class three from a type two, from no idea. And in New York, we're a little different, right? We have our own 1938 building code. And it works for us because everything we do kind of revolves around it. You know, we have a critical information dispatch system. We call it SIDS. And in the SIDS, we always put the type of, you know, construction. And we use class one would be a fireproof or a fire resistive. Class two is, we call that a fire resistive. So a class one is actually fireproof, right? And the way we always remember it is one word, fireproof, two words, fire resisted. Class three, like a type three, is a mixed or a non-fireproof. Class four is wood, right, because it's four letters. Class five is metal, and class six is timber. And I couldn't tell you, when I was in probie school, I couldn't tell you what was what. So it was just interesting, you know, that these probies are so concerned about building construction, because now, you know, so many years later, you know, it just becomes part of my nature, right? You know, if you tell me a type of building, you know, and you give me a number or a letter, whatever, I'm going to know what it is automatically. And that 38 building code works for us. There was never, ever a need for us to modernize it. So what I'd like to talk to you about, Chris, today, let's talk about some building construction in particular, and is some of the misconceptions, but the usage of terms, right? So I know in a class four building, right, a wood construction or a type five in the national, the NFPA, a type five would be a wood construction. You know, we talk about platform and balloon and brace, whatever. And that only really applies for wood construction. So what are your thoughts, Chris, on our system, the 1938 building code? I mean, it works for us. I mean, I don't know if it really is modern, but it does work for us.
Well, you know, Danny, the classification of building codes goes back all the way to right after the Civil War. And for many of our listeners, they may not be aware of sort of the history behind it, but again, you're absolutely correct. The metropolitan area of New York City, specifically outside of the rest of New York State, has retained the classifications of buildings based upon a different subsequent building code. And bear with me, because I'll give you a quick little snapshot here of some elements here. So our building classifications, of which the rest of the American Fire Service is more commonly aware of, those classifications from 1 through 5 fall under the NFPA 220 standard. Those are consistent with the NFPA codes, both the NFPA 1, 1001, and the 5000 code on building construction. They're also aligned with the International Building Code, which is consistent with the rest of the country also. But again, when we talk about the development of codes back in the 1800s, specifically after the Civil War, is when some of the initial standards, and they weren't even codes at the time, they were regulations, they were some laws that were designed and implemented that all came out of the large conflagrations that were occurring up and down the East Coast and in any metropolitan area, Chicago, St. Louis, and Los Angeles, to or LA in California to a certain extent. But as the code started coming about, the first series of building types and codes came about in 1900. 1905, the National Board of Fire Underwriters developed the first set of standards. They drafted the first criteria for different codes of building classifications. And then over the next series of decades, those things changed, and they changed dramatically, and even the numbers change, the way we classify them in terms of the numericals, whether it be class or type one through whatever. But the first codes and standards, when we talked about building classifications, there were only three different types, and they were type one, which was public buildings, and they had class alpha and class bravo. They had type two for residencies, and they had class Charlie and Delta. And then class three, which were business classifications, and that was a class Echo and Foxtrot. Those were all the first series of codes all the way from 1900 through up until about 1905. So it wasn't until, again, 1938, and then all the way to 1968, that the codes that New York City has implemented have stayed with us with those numbers. So for the metro area of New York and for FDNY, they work because of the complexities, because of all of the things that went into those buildings, all the way from the early development of the tenement constructions all the way till now. So for FDNY and for the various boroughs, it works across all disciplines, whether it be the fire side, whether it be buildings and codes, life safety, and so on. But the rest of the country, unfortunately, has gone to a different series of codes and numericals and referencing, which when you sometimes hear it, you don't understand it. But I think once you have a clarity of what matches up to what, it really all makes sense. I mean, whether you call a heavy timbered building class 6 or class 4, as long as we understand what that means, and we understand in that area, it's called this, and then other areas, it's called something differently. So it's just the nomenclature and the referencing and so forth. But you know, we've talked about it on a lot of different programs. And again, you know, even going back to the 1930s referencing that you just talked about, you know, you have fireproof, fire protected, non-fireproof, the framing and so forth. So it always reverted back to what is the degree of protection that's being provided that structure and its particular usages. And that was a pretty big to do back in the late 1980s, the late 1800s and then the early 1900s. So it wasn't until 1968, especially with the New York State Building Code, that really became solidified. So when you look at the 38 and the 68 code, that's what's exactly in place there in New York City.
Yes, exactly. So we ask ourselves as firefighters and chiefs and officers, and, you know, why is it important? You know, why do we have to classify buildings? And I say, from my point of view as a battalion chief, you know, the first thing I'm looking for, I do a size up. We call it an acronym. Cold was wealth, right? And the C, the first thing that I'm looking at is the construction. And why? Because, you know, what effect is the fire going to have on the construction, right? A fire in a class one, which is a fireproof, is a lot different than a class four, which is a wood frame, right? Conversely, you know, the fire spread in a class four is going to be much more rapid, you know, especially like if we had a row frames, like say three or four row frames. But on the flip side, you know, if I got a class one, and I know I have like the other, just last week we had a job, it was a 20 story fire, was in a compactor, and the smoke becomes a problem, right? So this is like kind of sets the stage for us when we're doing a size up, you know, the first thing, you know, the construction, the occupancy, and then all the other things follow suit. But these for me are the two most important things, are the construction and the occupancy. Now, you know, you talked about 1968 building code, and I think now we've also, I think we're up to like 2018 building codes. And one thing that we have to start recognizing is that what we're doing now is we're using the same codes, like class one, class two, class three, class four, class five, six, but we're also adding to some of these, I think it's a class two, not so much, but class three and class four, lightweight, right? Because now we have now, when we get a SIDS, we have a phone alarm for fire, and we'll say class three LW, lightweight. And that, instead of like reclassifying things and whatnot, we're just keeping it very simple, using the old code. So I know when you say class three, I know it's a tenement building, right? It's mixed construction. We're going to have, you know, wood joists and brick on the outside, but those wood joists possibly could be replaced by lightweight. And that's a whole game changer now, right?
Well, yeah, there's no, I mean, you talk about wood frame. So generically, when we talk about wood frame construction in its classification, there's a whole gamut. So when we talk about reading the building and sizing it up, so do I have brace frame? Do I have heavy timber? Do I have a variety of heavy timber in terms of mill, semi-mill construction? Do I have balloon frame? Do I have platform frame? But then we get into the lighter weight engineered. I mean, again, one of the things that we've been preaching and advocating in many of our construction classes is that even with engineered lightweight construction, if you look at the type of lightweight construction built in the 1980s up until around 2000, and then from around 2000 till now, the last 20 years. So 20 years in the late, you know, that 80s to 2000, in the last 20 years from 2000 till now, that lightweight engineered construction has changed dramatically, even in terms of the kinds of materials and how those components were built, whether it be a wooden I-beam. You know, a wooden I-beam in 1980 is different than a wooden I-beam here in the lightweight engineered I-beam in 2021. So it's important to have those subsets. It's important to understand that building anatomy. You know, what's the structural system? And as you just talked about, from a commander standpoint, whether it be company officer or command officer, it's all about how is that building going to perform? What's the degree of resistance? How is smoke going to migrate and travel and affect components? Then more importantly, how is fire going to travel and impinge upon either a lightweight 2x4 or an 8x8 heavy timber column? I mean, each one has different resistance, which equals to what? It equals to a different level of time and, you know, performance and our ability to suppress the fire or the effect of the building being able to withstand that fire while we're trying to put it out.
So, to kind of put that in perspective now, right, to tie this in construction with what's happening in today's fire service, right? So in the modern fire service, what's changed, right? We have lightweight construction. We have houses that are bigger. We have more open floor plans. We have materials that are made of plastic and poly, whatever, all kinds of poly, whatever, sirens and whatnot. And, you know, smaller building lots and all these things coupled together. What's happening now is, so we're having more intense fires, right? Because the furnishings that we have are going to flash over where it used to be maybe 25 minutes. Now it's flashing in 3 to 4 minutes, right? Lighter weight construction. You know, there's no chance for compartmentalization because most houses now have open floor plans. So all these things coupled together, you know, is part of our size up. And this call was, well, you know, we have to now, not only do we factor in the construction, but we have to factor in everything else that goes with it. It's not like the old days where, you know, you have a class three building and, you know, the rule of thumb was, well, we give it 20 minutes. And if we're not making good progress, then we start rethinking our strategy. But now all bets are off, and construction is, I think, is the biggest part of it. Because, you know, we have, sometimes we even have hybrid buildings. We have mixed construction where I've seen it personally, where we have regular dimensional lumber, and right alongside it, we have C-joists or laminated I-beams or MyLams or whatever. So this is, I don't know, it's just becoming more and more tricky.
Well, it's becoming more challenging for a commanding officer in the street based upon building intel. So hopefully you've got some kind of building intel that's coming to you in whatever format, whether it be computerized, whether it be, you know, the old pre-fire plans, whether it be information coming from dispatch or the tactical channel, some type of building intel, or intel from the companies as they're getting into the building. So you've got some assumptions that you're making based upon what you're reading in the building, or the knowledge of you that you have of the building. You have building intel that's coming in, and then you have intel that's coming from the companies as they start getting into the building and seeing some things and picking up some things. So from a commanding officer's perspective, you've got a lot of things to juggle, validate, you know, make assumptions, but then to validate what they may be and tie them into, are we doing the right thing? Do I have the right time frame that I'm looking at? Are they making a headway? Do I have an open plan with a heavy fire loading that's going to affect some type of an exposed component, assembly, or system? So to your point about hybrids, you know, one of the challenges, so there's two distinctive areas that hybrids really becomes the biggest problem in doing the reads. You've got your residentials, which is a little bit easier to pick up on some things if you're keeping track of what's happening in your first due, whether it be a district, a battalion, or division. It really becomes a more challenging aspect when we look at commercial buildings that are hybrid construction, which is more common. We are seeing a much more diverse amount of materials that are going into our common commercial buildings, the freestanding standalones, the strip malls, and so forth. And again, whether it be in a suburban or urbanized setting, in the urban setting, we're seeing the typical types of taxpayers, commercial buildings that had a very common type of construction for decades upon decades of time, as they are being retrofitted, updated, or renovated, just a new tenant coming in, we're seeing a variety of different kind of new materials being added into it, of which lightweight, both wood and lightweight structural steel, the C channels, the lightweight, light gauge metal, and the engineered construction are going into them that are game changers. And again, it's gonna change the amount of time that we have to operate in, around, under, or on top of those buildings. We just don't have the same time had those buildings been still retaining the original construction from, you know, the 20s, 30s, or 40s. If I'm looking at a commercial strip building today, you know, and it's a taxpayer, the question is going to be, you know, what has changed in that building over the last few years that is going to cause me some concern because of the construction? It's all about the construction, Danny. Absolutely.
Yeah, so... anyway, you know, with regards to construction in New York City, right? So what I've seen personally now, you know, because I work predominantly, I've worked in Harlem and mostly South Bronx, but in Harlem. And when, you know, when I got on the job, we had lots of buildings that were just, they were vacant. You know, there's not many left now, but they were just vacant buildings. And I guess somewhere along the late 80s or the 90s, they either did one or two things. They either tore it down and then replaced it with brand new construction, lightweight, you know, like townhouses, or they would renovate these buildings. And I found if you missed an opportunity when they were doing the construction, like what a lot of times what we do is we'd be driving around the neighborhood and then we see a building being renovated, we get off the rig and we go in and we take a look. And it was kind of like a pretty well known amongst us, you know, like that if you don't get a chance to look at what's there before they put the sheetrock up, yeah, you're never going to know what's got up there.
So, opportunity, yeah.
So what, you know, I wish in hindsight, you know, back then we didn't have, you know, phones, right, that took pictures, man. But could you imagine if we did? But, you know, if you had the presence of mind to have one of those little 35 millimeter cameras, you could take some pictures just to put it in a file and say, listen, okay, you know, we have 400 Brook Avenue and we know we have Sea Joyce. But if we miss that opportunity, we never got a chance to put that on the SIDS. Those buildings, there's plenty of buildings, I'm pretty sure, in the Bronx that we know they're renovated, but we don't know exactly what the construction is. I mean, we don't know if they used MyLams or laminated I-beams or C-joists or whatever. And that's what scares me about building construction is that, you know, unless you know, what's holding up this building, it's very difficult as a chief to make, you know, good decisions.
Well, you know, the whole aspect of predicting, you know, you're going back upon a building that's in your first due or your second due or, you know, mutual aid response. You're going into either territory that you have some familiarity with or something that you're not quite certain of. So from a commander standpoint, actually from a first due company standpoint, again, you know, go and no go. It's not always as simple as that, although many of our colleagues have a lot of these go, no go, you know, programs and, you know, trying to figure things out. You know, you've got to utilize some critical thinking. You've got to look at subtleties. You got to look at the things that are obvious. You need to, first and foremost, you got to know your first due. And I think you've got to be out there with the companies looking, discussing that back at the kitchen table, sharing it with the battalion and with the other shifts. Whether you take photographs or not, that information can be captured somewhere. Back in the day, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, that kind of information was just captured, you know, verbally. Maybe somebody took some 35 millimeter slide film and took some pictures, but it was always, encumbering. It was always a big deal. You got to take the pictures, you got to get them developed, then you got to get a slide projector, you got to throw them up, you know. So I recall a couple of things that I was out in San Diego doing a program once, and I had a company officer, captain out of a house come up, and we were talking about where things were moving to. And he says, you know, we keep it pretty simple. He says, we've got a small little index card metal box from back in the day. Mm-hmm. And in there is the box, is a box, not numerical, and an address and some building history and information. And as the guys go back and forth to jobs and, you know, go into whatever, even just EMS runs and whatever opportunity they have to get into a building, if there's something different in there, they captured it and put it on that card. So once, chores were done in the morning and the shift roll call is done and over with and they had some downtime, they would take that metal box, put it on in the middle of the kitchen table or in the day room. And the captain would ask somebody, all right, pull a card out. And they pull the card, they give a box number, address. And then the expectation was, as they went around the room for the guys on the company to reiterate or recite information, building intel information about that so that they could, again, reinforce it. And you had some knowledge base, but that is difficult at best with busy companies, maintaining and updating that kind of information, even pre-fire plans, unless you've got a very robust electronic type of data system, RMS, and so on. Most companies around the United States don't have the time to get out there, perform the in-service inspection, stay up to date with it, and so forth. But it all goes back to, again, having something to go on. And it goes back to what we constantly talk about in terms of how to read the building, how to size it up, what are specific types of things that one looks at, whether it be a commercial, mixed-use occupancy, a tenement, fireproof, non-fireproof, fireproof protected, so on and so forth. There are certain things about buildings based upon when they were built, it's going to give you some insights that you need to know. In other words, you need to do your homework up front. You can't expect all of those answers to be out there showing up on scene and suddenly and magically they're coming from someplace because it ain't going to happen.
So that being said, you know, we talked, I guess it was 2 years ago and I gave you a call and I said, hey, Chris, I got this idea. And I actually got the idea from, I kind of combined two thoughts, right? I was over in Israel and I did a walking tour of Israel, of Jerusalem. Yeah. And I thought it was just so cool, you know, because, you know, you read the Bible or whatever it is, and you read all these things and you try to imagine what they look like, and you really can't, you know, you can do the best you can. You see pictures and stuff, or whatever, but you still, nothing like just walking. And like, especially when I walked like the Villa, what do you call it? The Via Della Rosa, you know, down in the old city of Jerusalem. And it's just like, I don't know. I just can't describe it. I mean, I've read about it. I've seen pictures and stuff, but actually walking it was just like night and day. It's just like, there's no comparison. And, you know, to your point about, you know, size up and all this stuff, I said, I know New York City pretty well, and I know construction kind of well. And I know you're really pretty proficient in construction. So I said, how about let's do a walking tour of New York City and let's take a look at the buildings. And, you know, I find that we won't be able to take a Halligan and rip open the walls, but just the idea of like seeing a brownstone and seeing the different features of a brownstone, of the parlor floor, the basement, the whatever it is, the scuttle lat, whatever it is, you know, the old law tenements, the interior stairs. There's nothing like walking it and touching it and seeing it to make it make sense. And I'm looking forward. I guess we're going to be doing it again sometime in December, right? Is that what we're planning?
So yeah. So, you know, we talked about this idea, you know, we collaborated on some things. We, on our end, we've been doing some size up and construction related tours for a number of years that were a direct offshoot of our building construction classes. In other words, you know, we did a segment of our classroom sessions in the classroom, and then we took our classroom out into the street to look at buildings on a much more broader basis. And then as you and I talked more about this whole aspect of size up and reading and how do I convey some things that for us, it's almost second nature, right? We can look at a building, quickly get past the kind of extraneous things that are out there and get to the key items here that help us from a company or commanding standpoint. So as we started talking about that, we ended up rolling out our first program on December 3rd, pre-COVID of 2019. And we did our, you know, ultimate firefighter walking tour there in Manhattan. And, you know, fast forward now as we're getting out of the, hopefully out of the pandemic standpoint, we've come up with a scheduled, and again, we kicked this around a number of different times, go, no go, as far as trying to make it happen. But right now for our listeners, Saturday, December 11th of this year, again, in a few weeks, about 5 weeks out, we are scheduling and have promoted, actually, as of today. The promotions are out there and live. We put a bunch of ticklers out over the summer and such, but right now on December 11th, on Saturday, we have set aside the entire day for a New York City walking tour with yourself and myself sort of being our facilitators, and hoping we can get a small cadre of everything from a firefighter in a small department all the way up to commanding officers in the largest departments. It's really geared for just about any rank and organizational structuring. But the bottom line, we're just looking to have a nice conversation in the streets of New York City, doing an X number of block tour over the course of the day, looking at buildings and talking about the job and putting our hands on things and really dealing with a three-dimensional world. And that's the biggest thing. You know, it's one thing to look at a picture of a tenement or a brownstone and talk about King's Row, talk about parapet issues, talk about parlors and, you know, offsets and light shafts, or taking a look at low rise or high rise, whatever the building types that there are. There ain't any better place in terms of having a classroom than New York City. And that's what it's all about. I think our listeners, as we are talking about this, can understand our level of enthusiasm, because when we did our program here 2 years ago, we had about 25 or so guys and gals from throughout the United States. And actually, we had one of our colleagues, one of our brothers from Toronto that came down, but we had some people from across the United States that came to New York City and spent the entire day with us in a very, how to put it, it was certainly a lot more than we expected, right? But You know, we spent a good solid day just walking the streets and really having an opportunity of a lifetime for some of these people to really get some perspectives and take away some things that are applicable to their departments and their particular cities, or even just their first do that are right there in New York. So although we're in the Big Apple, it's all applicable to any organization and department wherever they may be.
Yeah, so I would say, you know, definitely bring your walking shoes, because we're going to do a lot of walking. We're going to start out the Fire Zone. We're going to mosey on into Hell's Kitchen, which, you know, if you think about New York City, see, I love New York City. And I could look at New York City and I could just, you could see how the construction matched the growth, right? So Hell's Kitchen, I know my grandmothers, when they came over from Ireland, they settled in Hell's Kitchen, and it was all tenement buildings, right? But you go down to the Lower East Side, like where we had the Five Points and those areas, they were developed a little bit earlier than Hell's Kitchen, right? Because maybe in those mid-1800s, Hell's Kitchen was probably still private houses and brownstone farmhouses, whatever, right?
Farmland, yeah.
Farmland. So, so you really could see, like, I could look at New York City and I could see exactly, you know, how the growth and the expansion affected the construction. Right. So as we're going to move down from Hell's Kitchen into Chelsea, maybe move over a little bit into the Village, and then we're going to ultimately wind up down in Soho. You could just see as we're walking south how, you know, how the buildings have changed over the years. I didn't even realize it until I started doing research for this, that in New York City, they call them row houses, but they're brownstones. We call them brownstones as well. And they started building them in 1820, and the last ones were built in 1920. So for 100 years, we have 13 different types of brownstones. And, you know, it starts out with the Federal Building, which the ones that were built in the 1820s to like the 1840s, they called them federal houses. You find them in Baltimore, Philly, mm-hmm. Boston, all over the East Coast.
All the way. And again, you know, whether we talk about brownstones here on the East Coast, which is really because of that type of stone that was predominant in our particular eastern area, or you go into the Midwest and Chicago with gray stones, whether we talk about St. Louis or Chicago and so forth. I mean, there's similar types of construction, maybe a little bit different in terms of materials, but row house, row frames, brownstones, the walk-ups, again, they're consistent items there that one needs to be aware of construction-wise, layout-wise, and so forth. And that's one of the things we'll have an opportunity to talk about and hopefully kick around, get into the alleyways, get into the backyards, and you know, take a look at some of the carriage houses, take a look at some of the cottage houses and some of the old lot tenements, new lot tenements. I mean, there's just such a vastness of history there that we have the opportunity within this series of block areas over the course of the day to take in just about everything. From, again, whether it be the brownstone, again, with Hudson Yards, we'll take a look at some modern high-rise construction, hopefully, and from low-rise to high-rise, and from tenements and taxpayers to brownstones and lofts and walk-ups, so a little bit of everything.
You know, it's a misnomer. People, when they think of New York City, they think of high-rises. They think New York is like the capital of all high-rises, and maybe not so much anymore with some of the other cities in Asia and stuff, but we're really more known for our bread and butter is the row house in New York City, which is, you know, you wouldn't think it was true, but they were built as private dwellings. Yeah. And between the 1820 and 1920, you know, everywhere you go in New York City, we have brownstones, row framed, row houses, you know, and
you know, the other thing about the age factor, too, is that you have the opportunity to see some of the impacts of what aging of a building does, especially because of that, you know, upwards of 150 plus years of being in place. Renovations, age, or let's just go back. So age and deterioration, how does it affect the various types of materials, whether it be the brick and masonry, whether it be the framing systems? That's an important item. We'll take a look at how the buildings were developed, whether it be the types of spreader plates, cast iron facades, and so forth, so that you have that aspect of the decades and then the centuries of time. But then the other piece here is the constant renovation and updating. There are some things that are cosmetic, some things that are done off the books that are very easily observable that, you know, the average individual may not pick up on, that we will certainly see. But some of those things that are also part of the established conservatorship. So, you know, one of the things that New York City has done a real good job on, starting a little bit in the 70s and 80s, but really taking hold in the 90s, was trying to retain, because of historical districts in some of the neighborhoods down there, so that the limited types of renovations that would occur aren't going to create the hybrid types of structures. You're going to have, more often than not, a lot more inherent construction. But I bet you, you know, a dollar to donuts, as they say, that as we're walking around, we will see evidence of these brownstones that all look like, you know, row after row, just like they did back in the turn of the century of the 1800s, 1900s. But behind them, due to the allowability of codes, the insides typically get gutted out, stairwell locations get changed, the floor configurations get changed, and you've got a different building on the other side of it. And we'll talk about how to pick up upon some of those things just by looking at, you know, the different kinds of window treatments, and how that sometimes is a very telling aspect, or getting the companies to the rear of the building, either off of the roof person, or getting somebody to the back rear, or sometimes just getting the engine company to go to the number three division and peek out that back area to start picking up on some things that are very important from the commanding officer standpoint. So sizing up buildings is a pretty cool thing. And it's, you know, it used to be pretty simple, just size up. And now we're talking about reading the building, which is really, as I put it, trying to be more literate, right? We're talking about how can any of our personnel be more literate in understanding fire, understanding the aspects of the buildings, which is so important in putting some things together. So it'll be a cool opportunity, Danny. I think if, as we promote it, I'm just looking at some of the things that have occurred over the last couple of hours. We just got some things live. As a matter of fact, the registration actually goes live at this evening. For those that are listening to the program here this evening, sort of in a live capacity, the link is up. So if you take a look at any of our social media pages, if you go to Fire Engineering Training Group on Facebook, we've got that posted on there, as well as across some of our other social media footprints. You'll find some descriptions on the program. Then more importantly, you'll find the Eventbrite registration link, so you can get some more details on the program and hopefully set up a reserved seat for you by registering online. And that registration is going to take place right up until just a few days prior to our class starting. I think the registrations are going to be good up until December 8th or 9th. So a couple of days just prior to the program. So just so we have some headcounts. We're going to do a walking tour. We're also going to go to the Fire Museum, FDNY Fire Museum, right, Danny?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Have that and we're also going to take in a couple of other, hopefully based upon our tour route, we're going to take a look at some other prominent historical, visit some historical locations in which some major fires that have occurred that have either affected civilians and or firefighter line of duty deaths, talk about them in the streets, about those events. Although many of those buildings have changed since the time in which those events occurred, but you know, I think one of the high points of our last tour was the 23rd Street fire location. We'll try to get to Watts Street, take a look at the Triangle Shirtwaist fire, along with a number of other commercial and high-rise fires over, again, the last 150 years.
Yeah, I think, and you know, this tour is, it's so much more than just construction, because what I like to do is, like, we start, let's say, on 51st Street now and whatever, between 5th and 6th, and we walk west. And as we pass buildings, you know, old law tenements, new law tenements, H-types, commercial buildings, brownstones, whatever it is, you know, we talk tactics. And I think, you know, we don't have to worry about, well, that's the way FDNY does it, because on a 1075, they get 50 guys and, you know, we only get 15, whatever. That's not important. What's important is, talking about where the first hose line goes, where to put the portable ladders, where to put the aerial ladders, where to position the apparatus, you know, where to get your water supply from. And it all becomes very apparent. I know on the last one we did that, we took a building, we just kind of walked it out, like, here's the engine, here's the truck, you know, here's how we get into the roof, here's how we size up how many floors per apartment. We look at the doorbells, we look at the mailboxes. Like, there's so many, I can't even think of everything that we spoke about, but it just all kind of ties in with the construction. We talk about the occupancy, we talk about that whole cold as well, and then we get into the operation. I'm going to try this time, maybe we get us up to the roof. We take a look at some of how these roofs are laid out, the bulkheads, the dumbwaiter shafts, the interior air and life shafts. I mean, all this kind of stuff. I mean, it's just very organic, right? It's just
very much kind of, very much so. The nuggets and the takeaways, I think, are the conversations we have. You know, there are going to be those subtle things that we will pick up because of our knowledge base and what we know of this integration of construction and occupancies and tactics and operations, that again may be that one little thing that somebody's going to take away and apply in their first do, whether it be somebody from South Carolina or somebody from Jersey or somebody from the Midwest. We had one of our fire officers, actually a retired BC fire chief out of Omaha, that was with us. So again, it doesn't necessarily have to be a metro-sized department application or world on a first do. We had some guys and gals that came out of some smaller-sized organizations. But again, a building that we see in the streets there, whether it be on 9th Avenue or wherever it may be, that same building may exist in someone's first or second do or mutual aid response area that's a standalone or part of a rows of a particular block that has all of the same aspects to it. So, you know, there's consistency in construction. There are some things that we'll point out. It's just a learning opportunity to up your game, to try to develop that literacy. And when we talk about reading the buildings, the worst thing you can be, right, as far as not being able to read and not being able to comprehend and understand. And that's, I think, one of the things that we'll be able to do through conversation and through examples and being able to point and put our hands right on them and stand in the street just like somebody would be at 2 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock in the afternoon and try to pick up on some things, right? Try to pick up and learn. And that's, I think, the cool thing about all of this. And once we had the conversations with the guys too, is that once everybody opened up and felt comfortable with it, we had great conversations about different aspects and challenges that they had. And, you know, working with a 3-person staff company or a 5-person staff company and everything in between. And, you know, everyone really contributed all the way around. It just wasn't us. It really was that questions and answers and insights that really made it a very dynamic opportunity. So I personally am very much looking forward to this particular scheduled activity. You know, going back when we came out of 2019, going into the early parts of 2020, you know, we had the entire year all lined up, right? We had a schedule and we were going to do a whole variety of different tours, some with, you know, going up to the Bronx and looking at the kind of construction up there and doing some low rise, high rise, and maybe even going over to Brooklyn and taking a look at some of the construction over there. But obviously that whole thing, our worlds really got changed up around as we got into the beginnings of the COVID standpoint. So this will be a refreshing opportunity for all of us to sort of get back together and share some common things. And then also to share, again, one of the things that we talked about also is we're going to facilitate and arrange a nice, you know, early afternoon, sometime afternoon, a lunch gathering where we'll go to some type of a nice New York City pizza joint, as I put it, right?
The best in New York.
Yeah, just have a nice laid back sort of recuperate from our initial walk, but you know, we're looking to offer a nice setting so that everybody can just sit, have some nice pies, and talk a little bit before we get back on the streets and then finish off at the FDNY Fire Museum there. And, you know, sort of.
I fully expect that we'll hit every type of building, probably except for the wood frames, because New York City, there's only a handful of wood frames. Yeah. We may stumble across one or two, but, you know.
Yeah, that's right. And again, but that's another thing too. Why is that the way it is? Because of the major conflagrations, the most significant event that occurred, which was the Great Chicago Fire, that clearly took away wood frame construction out of high dense urban areas and replaced them with masonry type construction. And that was the game changer. And that, again, whether we talk about the tri-state area of New York and New Jersey and Connecticut, Boston, Philly, DC, Baltimore, Chicago, Denver, St. Louis, all the way from East Coast to West Coast, these things all had a rippling effect. And everything really from a construction standpoint, Danny, when you talked about codes and history, much of what occurred, especially out of New York State and New York City, because of the growth and the development in the 1800s, that and the codes and the standards that were developed eventually impacted everyone else all the way across the country in those early years of the late 1800s, early 1900s. So that's why it's such a great classroom setting, because it all eventually translated and appears in everybody's jurisdictions to some degree. You know, again, some areas, you know, a lot of growth has really taken away a lot of the brownstones and row houses, row frames, and replaced that with an urbanized suburbia, you know, commercial building, strip malls, garden apartments. So, you know, an awful lot more of hybrid engineered construction, but somewhere somebody's got, you know, a two or three story walk up or that brick and joist constructed building. And unfortunately, we see the results of not sizing up, not reading, not understanding the building, with, you know, significant fire events, significant injury events, and certainly there's been plenty of what we call history repeating line of duty deaths in buildings that, again, are nothing new, but the lessons aren't getting learned, and some things are unraveling during the conduct of operations. So
yeah, we're gonna probably finish up down in Hell's 100 Acres, and you know, you talk about a game changer, right? The Triangle Shirtwaist Fire, with I think 129 maybe women jumped out windows, and you know, and that had a serious effect on the fire prevention laws for factories and whatnot in the whole world, actually. So we'll be looking at that. I think we'll finish up in the New York Fire Museum, which is, you know, the other thing to say about this tour as well, this aside, it's December 11th, which means that everything is going to be getting ready for Christmas, right? So if guys want to bring their wives or husbands or vice versa or whatever, it's also, the 11th is, I think it's a Saturday, right? So
yes.
It's a nice little chance to maybe go see a play that night, go to a dinner, you know, down in somewhere down in Midtown or the Broadway theater area, and then walk around Fifth Avenue, look at the decorations in the windows, the tree's going to be up. It's going to be a spectacular time of year.
Yeah.
I love right before Christmas in New York City, there's really no place like it. There's so much going on. There's so much energy. And this is going to be, you know, we're going to walk the High Line. We're going to stop off at the Hudson Yards. We're going to see the most modern fire control, you know, station anywhere in the world. We're going to leave there. We're going to go to a high-rise residential, and we're going to talk about some size up there and some tactics, some standpipe operations and elevators and whatnot. And then over to the 23rd Street Fire, maybe over to the phone company, down to Soho, and then that'll be a full day. So yeah. I'm exhausted just talking about it.
Yeah. Well, you know, hopefully, too, you know, as we get into next year, we're going to, you know, this hopefully will not be a once and done. You know, we're going to look at some opportunities in 2022 and, you know, put some of these programs on the road. But I think New York City will still become that destination location, because there ain't any other place like it. And I think it affords our students, our participants, an opportunity of a lifetime. So for those of you that are listening in and or are listening to the download here on our program, a lot of things that are going to be looked at in 2022 with maybe a number of programs getting into the summer and into the fall. As, again, our world starts stabilizing, we'll take a look at some other opportunities. And maybe, you know, Danny, we also talked about some specialized types of programs, just focusing in on certain building types and such, too. So how we end up doing it. But, you know, if you're not able to join us on this particular program and tour, please, you know, keep track of what we're doing, follow us along on social media and so forth. And I'm certain we're going to have a few other programs scheduled into next year, God willing, and so forth. So
yeah, well, maybe what I'd like to do at some point is do the South Bronx, what they call the Warriors, down where I used to work in 17 Truck. And that alone, that area is just, yeah, it's just amazing. The amount of fire duty, and just to see what's still left there is amazing. So, yeah. Well, I look forward to it. We're kind of running a little low on time, so we'll, I guess we'll start wrapping it up. And so look for us on Eventbrite, and you know, we have a lot, you know, we're gonna, a lot to talk about. So we look forward to hopefully some of you will join us. If not, maybe another time. So Chris, thank you for being here tonight. I'm sorry for the short notice.
No, not at all. So I'll put another plug in. I've got my, you know, we talked about scheduling and so forth. So I've got my podcast on our Buildings on Fire podcast here on fireengineering.com blog talk radio. That's scheduled for December 16th on a Thursday evening. We'll do it live program. We'll talk about a number of events, and we may actually, we'll talk a little bit about what we ended up hopefully doing here on our tour, but we've got a good, nice program talking about a couple of jobs that are historical in nature there in the December timeframe. So for our listeners, tune in on the 16th, and hopefully we'll see some of you in the streets of New York City here in a couple of weeks. So Danny, thanks as always.
Thanks.
For those of you that are planning for FDIC, again, both Danny and I are both going to be presenting some workshop programs. Danny's got a brand new program. I've got an updated program. So take a look at FDIC scheduling on the fireengineering.com website. Go to FDIC and take a look at the schedules that are upcoming, and you know, start planning your April timeframe for April of next year. And we'll have some really cool programs for you, along with a lot of other stuff that Fire Engineering always is known to bring forward. So exceptional opportunity here. And Danny, thanks as always.
Thanks, Chris. All right. And to all everyone out there, until I see you again, be safe and enjoy your, have a very blessed Thanksgiving.